Welcome to the Bills Breakdown Podcast. I am Nate Schreiber, and as always, with my co-host, Alex Pollinger.
The Bills snatched defeat from the jaws of victory yet again. The same franchise we've rooted for our entire lives. struck again, Nate.
Yeah, this is the Bills of old. This is the Bills we have come to know and love over the last, I don't know, 15, 20 years. They find any way possible to lose a game. It's like most teams are trying to win a game, the Bills are trying to lose the game.
It was one of those things, like, as soon as Peterman made that incredible throw, it's the best throw a quarterback has made on the Bills all season to Zay Jones for that touchdown. It's like, all right, now how are they going to screw this up? And sure enough, Peterman throws away to throw two picks inside the final, 3 minutes of the game, not even?
Yep.
Yeah, it's unbelievable when you look around the NFL. All of the quarterbacks who can be competent. I mean, you have C.J. Beathard out there slinging the ball all around on Monday night. C.J. Beathard, and the Bills can't find anyone like that. And those guys were out there. I mean, look, guys like Blaine Gabbert. He's not terrible, but he's competent. They could have got him. Instead, he's playing behind another terrible quarterback in Tennessee. It's just, it's bewildering to me why they can't find someone competent to back up Josh Allen. They have to give up on Nathan Peterman.
Yeah, and I'm hopeful that Derek Anderson will be a marked improvement from any quarterback the Bills have had on the field this season, because at this point in their careers, I think Derek Anderson is Derek Anderson is clearly better than Josh Allen as a quarterback. And I think this is good in a way for Josh Allen that he got hurt and is going to have to miss at least a few games and watch and learn from a veteran like Derek Anderson. I mean, if we get 2007 Derek Anderson in Buffalo, I'd take that. I would take that.
At this point, I will take anything where I'm not fearing that there's going to be an interception whenever the ball's thrown in the air. I know we rode Peterman pretty hard after that first game. At this point, it's on Bills management. You can't continue to put that guy out there. Nate, I'm not even trying to be funny. It's honestly cruel to do that to the guy, to put him out on the field again. He obviously doesn't have the confidence in his own abilities. How can the coaching staff? I don't understand it.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly don't. I don't understand specifically how McDermott can still defend him and say, like, all the coach speak, oh, he works hard for a football team, yada, yada, yada. That level of play, what is he? He's thrown interceptions in like 15% of his passes in the NFL. Probably not that much, maybe like 10 or 12, but still, that's not sustainable, and it's maybe the worst. I don't have this in front of me, but I wouldn't be surprised if it has the worst start to a career by any quarterback ever.
Yeah, it was the stat of the day for Lebatard today. Peterman's thrown 10 picks on 82 pass attempts. And his career interception rate, I think that puts it at like 11.2%. To reach that interception rate on his career, Tom Brady would have to throw an interception on his next 1,000 pass attempts.
Yeah, and so we can clearly see the difference between what the Patriots have and what the Bills have, and we're willingly, Sunday was not willingly, but before Sunday, they were willingly putting this guy in the field multiple times.
Yeah, it's... I don't get it. You have to wonder, I haven't looked at this, is this the worst 82 pass attempt stretch in the history of the NFL for a single quarterback to throw 10 interceptions? I mean, I know that's a small sample size, but it's difficult to be that bad. And I don't say that to be mean to Nathan Peterman. They need to stop putting him out there. Put Derek Anderson out there. I don't care if he doesn't know the offense. It can't be worse.
I mean, I think that I think Derek Anderson will know enough of the offense by Sunday to be able to play. He did play in a Brian Daboll offense before, so some of the terminology is probably going to be the same. He's also a veteran who's played for so many different offenses that, regardless of the terminology, he probably has heard it somewhere. So I would imagine he will be ready to go on Sunday. I mean, we still have to deal with Nate Peterman being the backup quarterback. So if Derek Anderson is hurt at some point in the game, what do we have to do again? Watch Nathan Peterman play football.
Nate, we talked about this earlier over text. I, honestly would rather have them cut Nathan Peterman, put him on your practice squad, let him be the scout team quarterback. I don't care if Josh Allen isn't available. Roll in with Logan Thomas as your emergency backup. Use Peterman's roster spot to put Kari Lee or Keith Tobridge in as another tight end. And Logan Thomas can't be worse.
No, I mean, and the Bills won a game last year with Joe Webb at quarterback, so anything is possible. I mean, Logan Thomas probably doesn't know enough to really be a great quarterback, but I mean, if it comes down to having to put Logan Thomas in the game, I guess you just hand the ball up every play. You have a better chance of scoring doing that than you let Nate Peterman throw it.
Yeah, honestly, a guy I work with was joking and saying, just put LeSean McCoy in and run the Wildcat every play. It'd be better. It's funny, but it's probably true.
Yeah, I mean, you can't get much. And I feel for the kid. And I don't want, people are out there attacking him on a personal level. That's not okay. But as a football player, I think his time is up. And I think the Bills would be best served for both him and for the organization to just part ways and kind of forget this ever happened.
Yeah. I mean, if you're listening to this and you have Twitter, please don't tweet mean things at Nathan Peterman. Don't tweet mean things to Nate Schreiber either. But don't tweet mean things at Nathan Peterman. Don't attack the guy personally. It's not his fault they continually put him out there. He knows he's bad. He's the one doing it. It's not like he thinks he's good. I mean, just feel for the guy on a human level. But I mean, if I'm Sean McDermott and you truly respect this guy and believe in him, how can you not sit him down and say, Nate, you know, we respect you as a person. We think you're a great guy, but you know, we think we expected too much of you. And you know, I still think that there's some talent there, but at this point, we can't put you out on the field, and I hope you understand that. And how hard is it to have that conversation?
It really shouldn't be. I mean, yes, it's kind of a difficult conversation for a coach because no coach really wants to have that conversation. But that's way easier to do than to pretend he's good and to pretend that you have confidence in him and say it in public when really you don't. And that's why I think one of the worst things that McDermott's going to do is after this game he says, oh, he has confidence in him, yada, yada, he works hard, and then he's not going to start him the next week. That's worse in my eyes than just coming out and saying, yeah, he sucked, or something to that effect, a little bit nicer, and he won't start next week. And we talked about it, and we're on the same page. Like, why is that so much harder for any organization or coach to do than to just say, oh, yeah, he's working hard, but we're just going to go a different direction?
Yeah, I mean, rarely do you ever get honesty from an NFL coach in a press conference, except for, I think it was Mike Zimmer when they're asking him about the kicker they had the first 2 weeks, and pretty much just said, yeah, the guy sucks, which is kind of mean, but how come we don't do that with quarterbacks? We don't, you know, we hold the kickers to a different standard, apparently, but that's kind of besides the point, but I don't get it. And, you know, Josh Allen might be out for a while, because we saw that news roll in, and I guess that's probably where we should transition to, Nate, is long-term, what do we do if Josh Allen has to have Tommy John surgery?
So, I mean, at this point, that's a worst-case scenario, if Josh Allen has to have Tommy John surgery, because that likely means he will miss, I mean, 100% he'll miss the rest of this season, and it likely means he would miss most of next season as well, if not all of next season. So then you're stuck with, come 2020, you have a quarterback in the third year of his rookie contract who has played in four games. Started. So he'll have started, what, five games, started four games, played in five, whatever it is. And that's not where you want to be with a player you've invested so much into. So I think the Bills will do anything they can to not have him have Tommy John surgery and try to treat it with physical therapy and stuff like that. It's a nightmare for the organization if he has to have surgery.
Yeah, and I mean, if it requires surgery, I know they sent it for a second opinion, the MRI. If it needs surgery, get it done, because you don't want to mess around for this, you know, with the next few years. Like, look what happened to Andrew Luck with the shoulder. I mean, that was a botched surgery. It was a bit different. But I don't know, this is the future of your franchise. If he needs surgery, let him have it done. And if it's, you know, a serious enough sprain that he probably shouldn't play for at least 4 or 5 weeks, that would take him up pretty much to the bye week. And by that point, the season might be over in terms of playoff hopes. So maybe if he's ready, put him in after the bye week. If not, there's no harm in having him sit the rest of the year, let that elbow heal, and just let Derek Anderson play. I mean, we figured the season would be a wash anyways. I guess at 2-4, with how the AFC is shaping up, you're still in the hunt. But you play the Patriots twice, there's two losses. At best, you're 10-6, and that's if you beat every other team you play. And I can't see that happening.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. And like I said to you shortly after he got hurt, I think Derek Anderson starts every game the rest of the season. And I still stand by that. I think Derek Anderson will start every game the rest of the season. I think his injury is probably bad enough that they're going to strongly consider not even letting him practice again until after the bye week, which that's four more games. And then at that point, it could be a situation where you think he's learning well behind Derek Anderson. There's no need to you don't want to rush him back out on the field. You're not playing for anything. And maybe you don't play him again this year. Maybe he plays like a Patrick Mahomes and plays the last game or something. But I think he's going to play significant. I don't think he'll start another game, but I think if he does, it's going to be maybe one or two. He's not going to come back and after the bye we can finish out the season or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, the Bills are in a predicament now, and if he does require Tommy John, Nate, you don't want to roll with Derek Anderson next year, do you? I mean, that's just a waste of this defense, and obviously they're going to be addressing the offense and free agency in the draft. You have to get some sort of competent quarterback, and that's not to say Derek Anderson might not be a competent quarterback, but they need something a bit younger and with a higher ceiling, I think, if they have to roll without Josh Allen next year. First name that comes to mind, people might not like it, but if you're serious about winning football games, Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah, he's certainly a name that if Josh Allen, if something happens here and Josh Allen's out for the season, and I still don't think they're going to sign, I think they're just going to roll with Peterman because that's just what Buffalo's going to do. Which is ridiculous because there is in no world is Kaepernick not better than Nate Peterman. But that's kind of besides the point. And who knows Kaepernick's exact willingness to come, especially come in and be a backup. But you'd think in an off season that you might want to give him a look.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at, Nate. Not for the rest of the season. This season's a wash. I wouldn't sign him. But for next year, if you have to roll without Josh Allen for at least half the season, yeah, bring him in to be your starter. I don't care about the media circus, and quite frankly, I don't care about people's views on his views on the national anthem and all that stuff. If you care about the Buffalo Bills winning football games, name a quarterback they can get that's any better than him that would help them win games next year. I'll sit here and listen.
Yeah. I mean, looking at the free agent list, you really have three or four options, realistic options, that are currently on NFL rosters. One is Tyrod Taylor, which is he'll be a free agent. I'm sure because I think he's got a team option. Or the Browns are gonna pick because it's for like $15 million, so he'll be a free agent. Josh McCown will be a free agent. If he's gonna play football again, who knows? Ryan Fitzpatrick will be a free agent. And then Brock Osweiler, who will be a free agent, and those are really from what I see the real options of guys who have started a significant amount of NFL games and could maybe be an improvement. Because Bridgewater's supposed to be a free agent, but why would the Saints have traded for him if they weren't going to re-sign him? So I'm just not going to count him.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much anybody that's not a veteran kind of journeyman quarterback is going to be probably re-signed by the team they're on. So I don't think there are any other options out there except for the draft. And you're really going to draft a guy for 1 year when you believe in Josh Allen long-term? I don't know. But I guess we can transition back to the game against Houston. I didn't get to watch the All-22, but I did watch the game live. Nate, you didn't get to watch the game live, but you got to watch the All-22. So tell me what was the most glaring thing on the tape.
The most glaring thing on the tape is two things. One is how terrible the offense is, just in general. Terrible. And the second thing is how much of the reason the offense is terrible is Josh Allen. I think that's a significant amount of the reason the offense is terrible. You can see pretty clearly on most of the plays that if he doesn't see what he's expecting to see at the snap, something goes wrong. He has a really hard time reading defenses right now, and that's why you see Dable having him motion guys all the time to try and figure out if it's man or zone, and having him only read half the field. And a lot of times you can see he's basically, if there's one safety or two safeties, before the snap, he's deciding where he's going to throw the ball. And that makes it very difficult for this offense to succeed, because unless the defense plays what they're showing you, which doesn't happen that often in the NFL, then Allen's going to have a hard time. Even on that play to McCoy, that's not a sustainable way to move the football. Zay Jones was kind of open on that play. Clay, he probably could have thrown the ball to Zay Jones, but the problem is he needs to throw the ball to Zay Jones before Zay Jones is out of his break, and Allen at this point in his career just won't do that.
Yeah.
And so that's just the exact, that plays as a microcosm. I mean, yes, it worked, but he ran around for a few minutes and play broke and they got 22 yards. That is the only way this team's going to move the ball, as if something like that happens. They're not going to do it out of the rhythm of the play.
Yeah, and Nate, describing how Josh Allen struggles to read defenses, I think it was Sean McVay last year with Jared Goff where they would run a hurry-up offense, and I think it was McVay, he calls the plays there, he can stay in Goff's headset until the 15-second mark on the play clock. Why not do that, you know, after a run play, get the team back up to the line so that Daboll can talk into Josh Allen's headset and help him, you know, diagnose what he's looking at?
You're right. That was a thing McVay did with Goff, to help him learn how to read defenses and help him go through kind of what his thought process would be if he was the quarterback. And I'm sure that made a huge difference for Jared Goff. I mean, look at what the Rams are doing this season.
Yeah, and it's just something that comes with experience. I try to do that on tape, just looking, trying to identify what the coverage is before they run the play. It's hard to do. And when you're the one that's got 300-pound linemen chasing after you, it's probably even more difficult to do. But, I don't know, you have to do things like that to help a young quarterback that doesn't have much playing time experience from college, you know, diagnose coverages and put them in a position to succeed. But, again, just from watching the game live, I thought Zay Jones was the best player on offense again.
He is. He is a very, very good receiver. He's constantly getting open, constantly getting separation. If Josh Allen, I think we're going to notice a big difference on Sunday. Zay Jones is probably going to have a big game this week if Derek Anderson's the quarterback, because there are so many plays that he is open. He's open enough for an NFL quarterback to make the throw. And I think that's going to – we're going to see that on Sunday, how good Zay Jones has gotten from year one to year two in the NFL. Because he is the most improved player probably on the entire team, but it's going overlooked because the Bills' offense is historically bad.
Yeah, and Nate, we've been on this for a few weeks now where we've said Zay Jones has been really good this year, and it's just going unnoticed because it's not showing up in the box score. And I've seen other, you know, Bills writers and beat reporters start to say the same thing. That's not to say we beat them to the punch, but the point is, you know, other people are verifying what we're saying. Zay Jones has been really good, and I agree, he's the most improved player. I would say John Miller is probably up there, but you know, he's done that a couple of times now, where year two was really good, years one and three were really bad, and you know, it's hard to see how the offensive line plays just from the broadcast view. How did the offensive line do in this game on the tape, Nate?
Not too bad. I think the offensive line, I mean, there were a few plays where guys got beat quickly off the snap, and looking at mostly the right side of the line. But I thought the offensive line was decent. And they were pretty good in the run game, especially in the second half. They gave Josh, I mean, they did their job well enough that Josh Allen could have made a lot more throws. A lot of the struggles in this game You can't really put them on the offensive line.
Yeah, and that's something we've seen all year. We expected the offensive line to be a problem, and it really hasn't. A lot of people were blaming the offensive line. You know, when I've sat in the stands at the home game, oh, this line can't block. Watch the tape, because they're doing all right. You can't expect them to block for 5 seconds on a pass play, because that's how long he's holding the ball sometimes. But I don't know. I've been impressed with the offensive line so far. It certainly hasn't been anything that impressive, but it hasn't been anywhere near as bad as we expected.
No, and the offensive line, especially on play action plays, that's one thing that I've noticed. Josh Allen actually looks like an NFL quarterback whenever there's a play action. Like, he probably, I don't have the stats in front of me, but just from watching the tape over the last few weeks, he probably completes 15% more of his passes off play fakes, and he just looks in rhythm. And his best throw of the season so far, in my opinion, which was the one he got hurt on, was play action. And he threw a perfect pass. And Kelvin Benjamin, a great route, threw a perfect pass. He just happened to hit his elbow on the guy's helmet and hurt himself. But that's the, when you see that, you see what the Bills saw in Josh Allen. And you see it, go back and watch just the plays where they run a play fake, and then watch a few of those in a row, and then watch a few they don't, and you see a huge difference in the way Josh Allen is in rhythm, the way he reads the defense. He just, for some reason, sees things way better when it's play action.
Yeah, I wonder if it's just a product of he doesn't have to think as much. It's more just reacting when he's doing play action, because his mind's not preoccupied with trying to go through the progressions or something because of that play fake. I don't know. But that play, I was watching the game with a friend who's a hardcore Patriots fan, and after that throw, even he was like, wow. I was like, yeah, I'm guessing that's what they drafted when they selected Josh Allen. And that was the first time we saw in a game that, like, just a wow play that not many guys can make.
I mean, that's a very difficult throw. And he put it in the perfect spot. Like, that's not an easy throw to make. He had to throw it under the deep safety and over the corner. And he had to fit it in a pretty small window. And it was perfect throw. And those are the throws that you see those. And if he could just do that more, that would be great. But at right this point in his career, he's not quite there yet.
Yeah, and he also had a great deep throw for 42 yards to Kelvin Benjamin, where only Benjamin could get it over the top of the defender. And it was negated by a penalty. But speaking of Benjamin, Nate, how did he look on tape? Because I thought he looked much better.
He looked pretty good. I mean, the long catch that counted on the play that got hurt, that was a really good route. Same thing on the one that didn't count. Like, and he looks like he's playing hard. Like we said, we noticed last week and continued this week, he's blocking very hard. And I've seen enough from him in the last 2 weeks to kind of remove him from my personal trade block if I'm the Bills. unless you get a really good offer for him, because since he is going to be a free agent, and I don't see them necessarily re-signing him. But if you want to keep the team competitive, remotely competitive on offense, you kind of need to keep him. I mean, you trade him away, and you trade him for a draft pick. Yes, he's not a number one receiver, but you're losing a lot. The Bills don't have great receivers, but I'd rather have Kelvin Benjamin than Andre Holmes for Kelvin Benjamin having 60% of the snaps, Andre Holmes having 60% of the snaps. Let's put it that way.
Oh, absolutely. And Nate, I think there was some overlap in Carolina with Derek Anderson and Kelvin Benjamin, right?
That is correct. So McDermott as well. So, like, McDermott knows Anderson from his Carolina days. And Anderson was there, I think, for Kelvin Benjamin's entire career, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, he has. So Anderson was there for his entire career, because he was in Carolina last year, too. And he's been in Carolina since 2011. So, I mean, they should. They probably haven't thrown it to each other as much in practice as, you know, Cam Newton did, but they should have some sort of rapport, just having been on the same team for the last 4 years.
Yeah, and even more reason to go to Derek Anderson, given that, you know, he has experience with your number one receiver, even if he doesn't know the entire offense. At least he's got that going for him. Nate, I think we've hammered the offense quite enough. LeSean McCoy was good, obviously, as usual. So let's go to the defensive side of the ball, where it was just another dominant performance.
This is one of the best defenses in the entire NFL. This is, and it's being wasted by an offense that probably is the worst offense in the NFL since like the 2002 Texans or something, which they were an expansion team and they were really bad. The Bills look like an expansion team on offense.
Yeah. I agree. They're one of the best defenses in the NFL, and the numbers support that, you know, since halftime of week two. I think they're cornerback two away from being the best defense in the NFL, and I don't think that's an exaggeration.
No, I would completely agree with that, 100%. This is a dominant unit, and it's a unit that on a team with a remotely good quarterback is going to make the playoffs. Like, a league average quarterback in an offense that caters to him makes the playoffs with this defense most of the time. That's how good this defense is.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the Kyle Orton year, where the defense was dominant, Kyle Orton was serviceable, they missed the playoffs by one game.
Yeah, and that certainly could happen. I mean, this probably with a good quarterback, this defense is going to easily win you 9 or 10 games, and that sometimes that mostly gets you in, sometimes doesn't get you in, but it's probably difficult for the Bills front office, the coaching staff, to realize that they're basically wasting this defense. Like, imagine if you just took like a Matt Stafford or something and put him on the Bills. How good would this team be?
Probably 10-11 wins.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we're trying to get at here is you could just grab an average quarterback from somewhere and throw on the Bills with the exact same receivers, and they're going to be better. Yes, there's not great receivers. Yes, that's part of why Josh Allen is struggling, but take any other quarterback. This defense is that good.
Yeah, and Nate, I just pulled up the team stats leaders. The Bills are third in sacks as a team. They have 19 on the year. And Baltimore just had 11 in the last game, so they're first. But the defensive line has answered our call to improve from last year, and they've surpassed expectations. They've been really, really good.
Yeah, they have been. And it's not just one player. I mean, the entire line has been really good. Interior, the ends, Star Latulele, who was someone that a lot of people ragged on the Bills for drafting, has been really good. Harrison Phillips has been really good, not drafting, trading, or signing in free agency. Kyle Williams has had a pretty good season by his standards, and he is not one of the better players in the defensive line this year. And past a few years ago, he might have been the best player on the defensive line. That shows you how good this line has gotten.
Yeah, and I've been impressed with Trent Murphy the last couple of weeks. He's done much better. He's not just trying to run around the right tackle every time. He seems to have a bit more of a purpose with his rush than just trying to run around someone. And, you know, obviously Edmonds and Milano was just lights out Sunday. I mean, the pass breakup on the goal line there was incredible. He was on, was that Fuller or QT?
Fuller.
Yeah, so one of the fastest wide receivers in the NFL. He looked like he closed the gap and deflected the pass away. That's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, those two guys will be the Bills line. They'll never come off the field for this Bills team probably for the next, if they stay healthy, next 8-10 years. Those will be the guys. And that's pretty cool to be able to say. Like, what other team in the NFL can say, oh, we're going to have these, our middle linebacker and our weak side linebacker for the next 7-10 years.
Yeah, and when the time comes, they better pay them, and they better make sure they have the cap space to do it, or I'm going to be really upset, as all Bills fans probably will be.
Yeah, there's three guys in this defense that are like the three guys you cannot in any way, shape, or form ever let walk in free agency, and those are Tre'Davious White, Tremaine Edmonds, and Matt Milano. The other guys, we could all maybe replace. We can replace some of them, find ways to fill their spots if we have to part ways, but those three guys are, those are like the three, in my mind, the three most important players on this team, on the defense.
Yeah, so before, I just want to make one more point about this defense. on Sunday, they gave up 3 points when Houston started in their own territory. The other 10 points came from Ray McLeod's fumble on, you know, their own 29, and then the blocked punt on their own 35. So basically, Houston was in scoring position twice. You can't blame the defense for that. Peterman threw the pick six. So really, out of Houston's 20 points, 3 of them were earned.
Yes, I saw something on, I'm trying to pull up again, because I saw that on Football Outsiders today, where the Bills have the worst, one of the worst five, this Bills offense is one of the worst five offenses since they started tracking offenses, and the defense is one of the best five defenses so far, at this point in the season. And that just doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, it's crazy. Just one more tidbit for you listeners. The Bills have forced 13 fumbles this year and recovered 7 of them. That's absurd in 5 games, 6 games.
That's exactly the amount you'd expect them to recover off those fumbles. Because that's one thing we do have to realize. Fumbles are complete. The forcing fumbles is a skill. Recovering fumbles is complete randomness. So, I mean, the only way it's not is if you just manage to rip the ball out of the guy's hand and never touches the ground. But you keep forcing fumbles, you're eventually going to recover a pretty solid amount of them.
All right, so last thing I want to touch on, unless you have something else, Nate, is special teams. They've been awful with a lot of mistakes on special teams. I mean, he had 2 turnovers because of it.
Yeah, first, like, what is Ray... Like, Ray McLeod was drafted to do just what he has... Like, to catch the ball on a punt. He made the roster to catch the ball when the ball is punted. He's not a great receiving threat yet in his career. And I'm not even sure what he was doing. And, like, I'm surprised, honestly, that Crossman still has a job.
Yeah, I mean, they've been terrible. And I would like to point out that Ray McLeod was drafted before Equanimeous St. Brown, who made a huge catch for the Packers last night on Monday night. So, it's just, I mean, it's one play, but... In terms of, like, pedigree, I don't understand that. I don't get the Ray McLeod pick at all.
We do have to, one caveat with that, EQ St. Brown's catching passes from probably the greatest quarterback ever. And Ray McLeod was catching passes from Josh Allen, Nathan Peterman.
Yeah, that is a solid point. But just in terms of, you know, pedigree coming into the draft, I know St. Brown was talked about as potentially like a day 2 pick at one point, and he slid all the way to the end of the 6th or beginning of the 7th round, which didn't make a lot of sense to me. But besides the point, Nate, anything else you want to touch on from Bills Texans on Sunday?
I think that we saw what we're going to see from this team all season. The defense is going to give them a chance to win the game, and the offense has to try to find a way to score 20 points. Like, I'll say it again, say it every week, the offense scores 20 points, the team wins. The offense does not score 20 points, they lose. Regardless, and the defense is going to give you a chance to win most of these games the rest of the season.
All right, so we're over a third of the way through the season. Nate, I believe you predicted 4-12 for the Bills. Are you sticking with it, or I'm going to give you a chance to revise your prediction?
At this point, I'm going to go, because of how good the defense is, I am going to, I think if I put my range like 3 to 6 wins, I am going to go upwardly revise my win prediction to 6. I think they're going to be 6-10. I knew the defense was going to be pretty good, but I did not think they were going to be this good. But I certainly expect the offense to be as bad as maybe not historically bad, but I expect the offense to be pretty bad. But I think the defense is good enough where they'll win 6 games the rest of the season, 6 games total this season, so they'll finish 6-10.
I said 7-9 at the time. I thought it was high. I think I'm dialed right in there. I'm going to roll with it. The back half of the Bills have the 3rd easiest schedule remaining. And that was before the Texans game. So I'm guessing it's around the same. I think they pick up 5 wins. Like you said, the defense is too good. I mean, they play a terrible Colts team that's ravaged by injuries on Sunday. If they don't win that one, then you're probably right. It's probably more 5 or 6.
Yeah, I mean, so the Bills, let's see here. The Bills have... Oh, that's NFC. Yes, they still do. They still have the 3rd easiest strength schedule left in remaining games. And they play the Patriots twice.
Yeah, I mean, the AFC is a dumpster fire right now. So, you know, Nate, lately we've been doing something other than an NFL-wide review of the past week. It's too much to go through, and you can get that from plenty of other sources. So we'll stick with what we did last week with just one topic, and we'll kind of debate it for 4 or 5 minutes. And so this kind of started over text between us today. If you're the Buffalo Bills, what would you trade for Aaron Rodgers, Nate?
I think I would trade a significant chunk of the defense, including one of Tre'Davious White or Tremaine Edmonds, plus a few other starters, and try to keep as many. This is saying the Packers may accept this, but and try to keep as many draft picks as possible, so you can have the Aaron Rodgers obviously costs a lot of money. And I think the best way to let him set him up for longer term success, if you're going to trade for him right now, is to bring him in, keep what you have draft pick wise, so you can continue to restock your roster, and then just rebuild. The defense, obviously, it's coached very well. They have a very good scheme, and I think they could find the guys to make the defense. They don't have to be a top 5 defense. They could be a top 15 defense, top 12 defense. I think that. When you get Aaron Rodgers, that's fine.
All right. So I'm going different here, Nate, as we discussed over text today. I would, rather than give up any players on that defense, I would give up the next 5 years' first-round picks for Aaron Rodgers. He's going to be 35 in December. He's probably got 5 years left. I would rather give up those first-round picks because you already have such a talented defense that Rodgers has never had in his career, and he's always had crappy skill position players. People just think their skill position players were good in Green Bay because he made them good. I think Devontae Adams is the one exception. It's the best receiver he's ever had. He had Greg Jennings at the end of his career. Other than that, he's made everyone around him. He can make this offense good, and LeSean McCoy is the best running back he would have ever had. So I think you're set there on offense. You don't need much more other than maybe a second or a couple wide receivers in the next draft. Your defense is already really good. You don't want to trade any of those young pieces. I don't know. I think you become a Super Bowl contender instantly with that defense and Aaron Rodgers, and you're there for the next 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, I would certainly agree with that. I think when you lose first-round draft picks for that long, it really puts a lot of pressure on your front office to be able to hit in the back towards the back end of the draft. I mean, we have seen the Bills front office, at least so far in their tenure, they have done a pretty good job hitting on those mid-round picks. And if they continue to do that, then the first-round picks lose a little bit of their value. But I think it's still very difficult to part with that many first-round picks because in a team's mind, they probably think, okay, all these first-round picks, there's going to be five great players. And we could trade like a great player, a few good players, and a bad player. Or five great players. You consider a first-round pick a great player, and that value probably is not necessarily right, but I still think I'd want those five first-round picks, and I'd be willing to part with some of my stars, one of my stars on defense, and a couple other pieces to keep those five first-round picks, and then also have Aaron Rodgers.
See, my thinking is, Nate, with how good Sean McDermott is at developing linebackers and corners, you can draft those guys second and third round. So even if you have to, like you said, Rodgers is really expensive, so it limits what you can do with the rest of your cap space. So eventually, Trey White's going to need to be paid. Tremaine Edmonds is going to need to be paid, and a lot of other guys on that roster. But I'm pretty confident in their ability to replace those positions. And, if they can just do what the Packers do and just draft a couple of receivers in the fifth and sixth round and Rodgers makes them stars, I don't know, that formula seems to make sense for me. Because even with first-round picks, the hit rate is only, I don't know, what is it, 50%, 60% on getting, a competent NFL starter?
Yeah, let alone getting a star player.
Right, and you figure if Aaron Rodgers is your starting quarterback and the defense is that good, your first-round pick's at the end of the first round anyways. So it's not even like you're getting the cream of the crop. You're getting what falls to you.
Yeah, I think the hardest thing to work with in this scenario would be the cap situation. And the Bills, while yes, the Bills have the most cap, their second most cap space in the NFL next year, they do have some room to work with and some room to sign some guys to contracts. I think that helps them in your scenario of just trading draft picks. Because another thing that they could do instead of if they needed to is go out and sign a couple of other free agents. And with because even with a Rodgers contract, they're going to have a lot of cap space. I still don't think I would trade 5 first round picks, though. I might, you know, amend my offer to be like a couple first round picks and then some players or something like that. But I still don't know if I'd want. I think the Packers would more surely would rather take your trade than my trade, though.
Yeah, this is an entirely fictional scenario. I don't think Green Bay in their right mind would ever even consider taking like 10 first round picks for Aaron Rodgers just because of what you're going to get for the next 5 years, even though that organization has, you know, actively played defense against him by giving him absolutely nothing to play with on either side of the ball for the better part of his career. But if you're the Packers, would you entertain that offer of 5 first round picks for Aaron Rodgers? Or maybe at the end of the season?
I don't think so. I mean, you have to you have to think about it from more than just a pure player personnel frame of mind. You have to think about it from the perspective of, you know, the business side of the game, the fans of the franchise, the community. I think if you take into consideration all of those things, you're not going to trade Aaron Rodgers. I mean, maybe you get the Cleveland Browns to trade you their first round picks in perpetuity for Aaron Rodgers, then you might consider it. But even, but I mean, other than that, I just don't see. I don't see a world where they even, because what that makes them look so bad to their fans, to their community. Oh, we're just going to trade away our best player and one of the maybe the best player ever, and just screw it. We'll get some draft picks for it, and we'll maybe be good in 10 more years.
I think you're right. This was a fun fictional scenario for us to play just because, you know, we love the Bills and Aaron Rodgers. That comeback was incredible. I mean, he's playing on basically one knee still. It has a 21-yard scramble where he still looked pretty quick. And then the corners for San Francisco are playing really, really hard outside leverage to try to funnel Green Bay's receivers inside. And he still just threads the needle over the top of the defender to get his receiver inbounds for the catch and immediately out of bounds. It was one of the most impressive game-winning drives I've ever seen.
I'm pretty sure that Aaron Rodgers could, if you could basically blindfold him until the ball was snapped, he'd still be a better quarterback than most of the quarterbacks in the NFL. Even if he couldn't pre-snap read the defense, and this requires defense not to like do anything too cheesy, like blitz everyone, line up all the line of scrimmage or something before the ball snapped. But I think he'd still be pretty good, even if he couldn't see until the ball was snapped. He's that good, and he just is just and such a natural feel for the game that you just don't that doesn't come along very often.
Yeah, and if you're a Bills fan that only watches the Bills for the most part, and you have time, watch Aaron Rodgers play. It's pure artistry at this point, and I feel like it's going to be one of those things like Michael Jordan where after his career is done, we're going to be like, wow. Well, not you and I, but everyone's going to be like, wow, this was the best player we've ever seen. I think he's underappreciated somehow, and he's the best quarterback in the game right now. He has been for a while, in my opinion. It's just, if you get a chance to watch him, enjoy it while you can, because it's incredible.
Yeah, and part of the reason he hasn't won as many Super Bowls as Tom Brady is, A, he's played for a little bit less than Tom Brady has, and B, Bill Belichick is not his coach. You swap McCarthy and Belichick, I think Rodgers has those rings and not Brady.
Yeah.
It's nothing to do. Like, rings don't measure how good a player is. I mean, rings count for something, yes, absolutely. And I'm not discounting Tom Brady's championship rings, but in terms of a pure football player, Aaron Rodgers is better than Tom Brady.
Yeah. I mean, if you put Rodgers on the Patriots, you know, since he came into the NFL, I think he has more than 5 Super Bowl rings. And I don't think that's crazy because he's that good.
Does Rodgers lose to Eli twice?
No.
Probably not. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we saw him rip through the NFC playoffs as a wild card a few times now. And, you know, they were going to beat Seattle. I think it was the year after Seattle won the Super Bowl the first time. They're up two scores on them, and then the defense and special teams completely choked. And so did McCarthy with the play calling, which Rodgers has been calling out lately. But it just feels like that whole organization has played defense against Aaron Rodgers his whole career. And just...
Aaron Rodgers' whole career from dropping so far in the first round, setting it behind Brett Favre for so long, people not liking him when he first came.
Yeah, and the thing that impresses me most, other than his accuracy, which is just out of this world, is how he moves in the pocket, and he never panics. You know, there can be a guy 2 feet away from him, and somehow he shuffles away, resets himself, and finds the guy downfield. It's incredible how he's able to dodge defenders and still keep his eyes downfield.
He's just a special quarterback. And that's why it's fun to throw guys open. What would it take to trade for him?
Unlike anything we've ever seen in the NFL, that Tom Brady moves okay in the pocket, it's nowhere near this level. I mean, I would give almost anything for 5 years of Aaron Rodgers in Buffalo, even if it's the end of his career.
Yes, absolutely.
I would take another 20 years of not making the playoffs after that to be a Super Bowl contender for 5 years again. All right. So I think this was a good little change up for the listeners and for us, Nate. We'll be back with you guys later in the week with the Bills-Colts preview. We're going to change the structure of how we release things. We're just going to do one wrap-up per week now like this, and then one preview. So you'll probably hear from us Thursday or Friday with the preview. And that brings us to an end of this episode of the Bills Breakdown Podcast. I am your co-host, Alex Pallinger. Subscribe, download, give us 5 stars wherever you get your podcasts so others can give it a listen. Do us a favor and please share the pod with one friend this week so we can continue growing. You can follow us on Twitter @Bills_Breakdown, Facebook @BillsBreakdown, and you can email us any thoughts, questions, comments to BillsBreakdownPodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.